Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning from Dallas, Texas, and welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. This is Perspectives, and on our special feature, January 18th, 2014. My name is Nathan Nkama, and I'll be your host. We'll be going to Lusaka, and we're going to be talking to National Restoration Party President, Mr. Elias Chipimo Jr. is going to be discussing a wide-ranging issues with us, and let me just inform everybody that Mr. Chipimo's appearance is brought to you courtesy of Fresh Aroma International Ministries, founded and administered by Pastor Mwaka Twagirayesu. The conference for this year, Fresh Aroma International Conference, is going to be held from Thursday, April 10th to Sunday, April the 13th, and the speakers include Bishop Eric Jacobs, Pastor Sarah Morgan from California, Dr. Nevis Mumba, and the Prophet Beverly Angel. You are all encouraged to register. Registration is free. Simply go to the website, fresharomaministry.org. I believe the registration is free. However, you still need to register to attend the conference so that you can get your welcome packet. Okay. It's a good day, and a lot of things have been discussed and mentioned in our previous segments. I want to say thank you to my colleagues, Twambo, who was speaking to a Malawian artist, and Roger, who was always starting fires. And we are grateful that he has done that. Okay, I think we are ready to go to Lusaka. Excellent. Today we are privileged on this 18th day of January 2014 to be joined by one of my favorite politicians. I say favorite because he just doesn't talk, because he thinks and he thinks through things. Mr. Elias Chipimo Jr. is the president of the National Restoration Party, which is popularly known as NAREP. Mr. Chipimo, good afternoon and welcome. Let's
I think see what he was there. I'm not sure if he's walked away, but he should be on.
I think he's on. Maybe it's just the connection. Mr. Chipimo?
Okay, let's try that again.
Okay, we will try that again, and we have a lot of things to discuss, so we will do our best, everybody. If you wish to make a comment or ask a question, you can post your information on Zambia Blog Talk Radio Facebook page or to our Twitter page, Zambia at Zambia Blog Radio, and I will try as much as possible to cover as much information, to include as much information as we can, as Mr. Chipimo is with us. And we will do our best because we have quite a wide range of things to discuss with him, and we want to throw in as much as we can. So as we are waiting for Mr. Chipimo, let me, Dr. Patrick, welcome back again.
Good to be back. Good to be back.
Yes,
it's always a pleasure.
Yes, one of our political leaders will be coming on in a bit here as we are. Okay, let's see. What in our discussion with Roger, we raised quite a number of things. And one of the points that came up was, let me see if he is back. Mr. Chipimo,
okay. Are
you there? Hello, Zambia. Okay, we'll keep waiting for him to come on. This is what happened. When we tested this yesterday, hello?
Okay, you're there?
I am here, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Excellent. Mr. Chipimo, I can hear you now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that we lost the connection there briefly. That was my fault. I was trying to adjust the volume, and I think I pressed the wrong button. But it's wonderful to be on your program in 2014.
Well, Happy New Year, and let's start on a light note before we get serious here and start drinking a lot of glasses of water. How did the Chipimo family spend their Christmas?
We did something very different this year. We went to a quiet place in Central Province on the banks of the Mulungusi River. We have a friend that offered the place, and so we were out of communication, out of contact, drank water from the river, ate fresh fish, and generally managed to relax a little bit. It was just a few days, but it was well worth it.
Excellent. Once again, Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us. I already did the introductions whilst we were having the technicalities. Mr. Chipimo, a few weeks ago, there was a meeting at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross. What was the objective and the theme of that gathering?
Well, Happy New Year, first of all, to all the listeners. And it's been a year that has started off on quite a fast note. And I think two main things seem to have characterized the local political environment. One is the issue that you have just highlighted, which is the issue of the constitution. And the other is very much tied to that, the question of opposition unity, because there is a general sense now that the levels of intolerance that we're experiencing from the PF administration require a more unified approach in order to address them adequately. And the Constitution has really taken center stage. You'll recall that in the PF manifesto, as well as during their campaign, they had always insisted that they would produce a Constitution. In fact, during their campaign, they had insisted that this would be done within 90 days. Now, there was a lot of pressure applied to make the PF live up to its commitment. They did drag their feet, but eventually set up a technical committee to look at preparing a final draft of the Constitution, which could then be circulated, debated, with the view to putting in place the program and processes that would enable a referendum to take place, the Constitution to be passed, and for everybody to work towards contesting elections under that Constitution. Mm. However, there were various problems that were there, and I think that really we can sum them up by concluding that the PF probably doesn't want the constitution that is being proposed to see the light of day before 2016. And so the cathedral event was a coming together of civil society, politicians, and other stakeholders to begin to apply the kind of pressure that will force the PF to live up to its commitments and its promises, but also to give the people of Zambia what they genuinely desire, which is a constitution that will stand the test of time.
Okay. The phrase that is being used for this movement is a coalition for a people-driven constitution. Who are the mobilizers? Who are the leaders? Who is behind this?
This is really a civil society initiative. In fact, Beatrice Grillo, who is the chairperson of NGOCC, a non-governmental organization coordinating committee, which is taking center stage in spearheading this process, but is working with other civil society organizations. And I think that the umbrella group is being chaired by Pamela Tesanga of ActionAid. They were very, very deliberate in stating that this is not something which should be seen as being driven by any one political party or any one particular grouping. But she actually stressed that in her presentation. Each of us was given roughly 5 minutes within which to do a short presentation. And it's clear that this is something that goes beyond just partisan politics. It's something that really affects the lives of every single Zambian. And so this is really a civil society agenda, but clearly it's an agenda that every right-thinking individual and stakeholder, including we, the politicians, wants to get behind and fully support.
You were one of, there were a lot of speakers at this meeting, Mr. Chipimo, which was held at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross. You addressed a gathering. What was your message?
Yes, I was one of the speakers. They had allowed for, I think it was five political leaders to speak. And my message was actually quite simple. There is an old story about a king who tries to turn back the tide. He's convinced that he has power over nature. He was called King Canute. And this was very much the thought that was going through my head. Now, King Canute, in order to prove that he could be power over even nature, decided that his throne should be put on the shore as the sea was coming in. And if he commanded the waves to go back, they would go back. But of course they didn't. They engulfed his throne and he would have drowned had they not rescued him. And I wanted to send the message, really, that you know, evil prevails because good men do nothing, and that we all have a responsibility to stand up. But I made a pointed message to President Michael Sata. I said he is standing on the wrong side of history. He claims to be able to listen to everything that's going on in people's bedrooms. This was a statement that he made once when he was upset with a comment made by one of the chiefs in the House of Chiefs. And he reprimanded that chief by saying, I know what goes on in your bedroom. So I simply said, well, since you claim to know what's going on in people's bedrooms, I'm sure you know what we are doing here today. You are on the wrong side of history. You need to come onto the right side of history and join us in delivering for the people of Zambia a people-driven constitution. I also pointed out that this is really more than just a fight for a piece of paper. This is a battle between good and evil. Because those who want to deny the people of Zambia a people-driven constitution are effectively allowing the underdevelopment, the corruption, the abuses that have led to loss of life and absolute poverty and abject misery for so many Zambians. And so that is the evil that we need to deal with. And I wanted to make the point within the church grounds that this is actually more than just a battle for a document. It's a battle between good and evil.
So when you make statements like that, Mr. Chipimo, to the president, that this is not just political or anything, but it's a battle between good and evil, notwithstanding, the president himself said he was going to be governing using the Ten Commandments. So how does he respond to that?
It's a very confused situation and position that we find ourselves in. I remember having a discussion with somebody where they were making the point that something must be wrong with us as a people generally if we can have thunder-wielding cadres marching the streets of the capital, somebody becoming maimed and injured and eventually losing their lives as a result of these skirmishes. And you must remember that these are skirmishes that are taking place within the ranks of those who came to belong to the ruling party. And when all of this happens, all we do is we go off and we talk about it in bars and in boardrooms, but nobody is sufficiently incensed and outraged to actually want to take some kind of positive action to challenge this kind of thing. And so we are living in a very abnormal situation. There is no place within the Ten Commandments that authorizes the kind of things that we are seeing being condoned in our country today. And it's absolutely unacceptable that leaders can turn a blind eye when they have the power to prevent this kind of thing to the continued use of threatening language and the threats of meeting out violence. Just recently, I think it was last week, individuals clad in fatigues, army fatigues and red berets were on public news threatening to sort out the area councillor for I think it was Mateo, and stating that if the police didn't deal with it, they would deal with this issue themselves. But they can go on and do this with impunity. So it's very clear that what is being said in terms of you know, ruling by the Ten Commandments and what is actually prevailing on the ground are two diametrically opposed situations.
President Sata, Mr. Chipimo, says the whole process of the constitution process has been hijacked. Doesn't he have a reason to be concerned? You have a consortium of civil society, 260 CSO, political parties, and everybody has just... His argument the other day when he was swearing in me, the gentleman in Andu, is it in Andu Waria, permanent secretary for Works and Supply, he said the government has a working constitution. How do we respond to that?
Well, we are seeing an interesting level of consistency, if I can put it that way. I think the one thing that we must take our hats off to Mr. Sata for is that he's consistently inconsistent. You know, there's not, well, there are very, very few positions which he has said he would see through, and he's actually seen through. So I think we're now seeing a consistency in his inconsistency. And so by stating that he will do one thing and then going ahead and doing something completely different, I think all of these things are very much in keeping with the character. But what it boils down to is that the people of Zambia are left wondering whether they can actually trust their head of state. And it's never a good situation when that starts to happen. We're seeing, you know, drastic changes and movements. In fact, recently, I think as recently as yesterday, there was a rumor that Bwalyang'andu had actually been now moved from Works and Supply and sworn in as a provincial minister for Mchinga, or permanent secretary for Mchinga. Now, it may or may not be true, but you can start a story like that, and people will actually believe it because this seems to be a consistent pattern. We are seeing, you know, chopping and changing at short notice with no clarity and no consistency. And I think that this is quite a serious thing. But within the third year of a new administration, at this stage, to still be having this kind of uncertainty.
You're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. We're speaking to Mr. Elias Chikomo Jr., president of the National Restoration Party, which is popularly known as NAREP. We had a discussion earlier about Chikomo on this forum about an hour ago. Let me just put it to you this way. Has the draft copy of the Constitution been released to the president?
You know, this is a very interesting issue. Let me first of all just give you a little bit of background as I have discovered and would believe to be the case. When the technical committee completed its work, they presented the draft constitution to the president. I think it would have been in early January. Now, the president didn't actually take a copy of that. But he said that he didn't like the cover. He didn't like the way the cover looked, or something to that effect. And so it was asked to be taken away so that the cover could be changed. Thereafter, various attempts were made at securing an appointment to hand over the Constitution. It seems as though all those attempts came to nothing. Then they were informed, the technical committee, that perhaps they should just handle this issue through the ministry. So I think attempts were made to deliver it to the minister. Whether they were successful or not, I'm not sure. But we have contradicting statements coming through from the cabinet, our government's executive. The president is saying that he hasn't received it. We know that through statements issued by his first secretary, George Chela. But we have Mwanza Kapea, who is the Minister of Information and Broadcasting, stating that they did receive it. So this, again, typifies the kind of governance we've come to expect from the Patriotic Front. And it's unfortunate that I even use the word we've come to expect, because this is a really abnormal situation. You cannot have a government whose left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. And I think that there may be more to this confusion than we think. It could be engineered confusion. I would even go so far as suggesting that perhaps the leak of this draft constitution is something that perhaps has been engineered by those who don't want this process to move any step closer to conclusion. Because if you can keep people discussing all the peripheral issues, discussing whether or not it's the genuine one that is now being leaked, or is it the real one which is being leaked. All of those issues simply create more and more delays. So instead of pushing for the Constitution, you are now arguing about who done it. And this is the kind of created confusion that fits the playbook that we've come to appreciate about how the PF does its politicking and its political business.
What is the way forward in terms of, as you sit down as leaders there, political leaders, civil society, the church, what is the way forward? And how does my good friend in Canada get involved, the sister in Australia, and somebody in England, they are saying, how do we get involved in this process? We just don't want to stand by watching and looking things happening.
It is a very sad situation, actually, Nathan. I mean, I remember the words of Lord Byron, who said, and if I laugh at any mortal thing, it is that I may not weep. You know, you look at what is going on in this country, and it really, in a normal situation, it should bring us all to tears. But in another sense, it should actually unite us around some common concerns and causes that we can say, look, let's work on this together. And clearly the Constitution is one such issue. Now, we have to raise the temperature and make it so uncomfortable for the government in power to continue to govern freely if they don't give to the people what it is that they promised and which the people actually need. And at this stage, the sense of awareness that has to be generated around this issue, because the pressure must come from all avenues, all angles.
Yes.
It is a wish of the people. It's something that will come through, there's no doubt about it. I my only worry is that we will be dragged right up until the very last minute before we can ensure a process that will guarantee that we can get a new constitution. And so, really, whatever people are doing outside Zambia, they must focus their attention and energy on supporting these causes. A lot of resources are required to move around the country to be able to communicate this message about the importance of generating a new constitution. And that is a role that can be played, publicizing this issue, making sure that we completely engulf social media with regards to how we need this process to move forward. And the requests are very simple. We simply want a roadmap. We want to know when will what be done. We want a referendum commission to be established. If you look at the terms of reference of the technical committee, these were drafted by the PF administration. They stated that the final draft would be handed over to the referendum committee, the referendum commission. And so, in a sense, it wasn't even supposed to be given to the government, but it was supposed to be given to the referendum commission, but they haven't set up that referendum commission. And so every amount of pressure must be brought to bear just to keep this issue very much at the forefront of the concern of the Zambian people.
Let's try to change the subject here a little bit. I know the issue of the Constitution is broad. There's a lot to talk about. We can go on and on until 2-3 days we'll just be talking. The nation's health services, Mr. Chipimo, are already fragile and limping. Does it make sense to fire the nurses? What is the situation of those nurses and the medical personnel who were dismissed? These are people with families. You're talking about unemployment levels in the country being astronomical figures or percentages which no government has wanted to discuss in the history of Zambia. Simply put, what is the state or condition of those nurses who were dismissed?
The situation of the nurses and the situation of the healthcare in Zambia generally is appalling. Let's just go back a little bit and look at how we got into this mess in the first place, because a lot of these problems are self-inflicted and they're man-made. If you look at what happened, the nurses and other general staff had been given general increments But the proportion of increment for the general staff was much higher than that was offered to the nurses, to the point where some of the general staff were even laughing at the nurses and saying, look, some of us, we didn't go to school yet, you went to school, and now we're almost earning the same amount of money. Now, when you look at what the nurses go through, and I'm not trying to say that they're angels, when you look at the poor state of the infrastructure, the health infrastructure, and what the nurses have to do, you can have some measure of sympathy about the rather casual way that they may approach their work. And I'll give you one example. In a normal hospital, you will have a ward, and a ward is quite big. You know, a whole floor may be divided into a few wards. And there should be doctor's rounds that are conducted every morning with nurses following those doctors, getting instructions, being able to do the basics, sending people over so that they don't die of bed sores. And, you know, bed sores is a serious condition. Changing people's cannulas, taking temperature, doing all of those things that they should be doing to provide the nursing care. Now, they're not able to do that because already they were very short-staffed. So they work very long hours, and they are very unappreciated. And, of course, when you work in an institution like a hospital and you see death on a daily basis, you become insensitive up to a point to the suffering, which is genuine, of any individual who will come in. Because for them, this is a very personal thing. But for the nurses, with everything that they have to go through, your brain will eventually develop a mechanism to protect itself by not being sensitive to all of the emergencies that may arise, especially if you are not motivated. And so this was an issue about motivation, and they felt demotivated. They took their case to the government. The government said that they would address the discrepancy, and they would deal with the problem. And I think they gave a time frame. Of course, they didn't honor that time frame, so they went on strike. And so that was the first strike. Government then went back and said, no, they would deal with this issue. And so they went back to work. But again, government didn't honor its own obligation. And so the nurses went on strike now a second time. And this was when, you know, all sorts of issues came up about the number of lives that were being lost, et cetera, et cetera. And so when you analyze this issue, you see that the problem didn't start originally with the nurses. It started with the obligations which government made itself and didn't fulfill. And because of so many challenges that are there, I mean, people are having to face high minimum prices, high transport prices because of the sudden removal of subsidies without stakeholder consultation or assessing the implications fully. And so these pressures are now being brought to bear, these nursing staff. So it's not a question of whether they are right or they are wrong, but there's a responsibility on the part of government to take the lead in resolving this issue. And we always called upon them to go back to the drawing board, talk this issue through with the nurses, live up to the commitments that they undertook to fulfill those commitments. We haven't seen that. And so the reaction was simply to fire. Now, we've always said you cannot fire your way out of Zambia's problems. That is not the solution. Right now, true enough, UTH is at death trap. You only have to go there with the right mindset. We'll see that the crisis is very, very deep. Now, the Vice President, Guy Scott, in panic, following the issuance of this statement that UTH was a death trap by Dorothy, which obviously attracted a lot of media interest and attention, then goes to UTH and starts to rubbish all those claims. Now, he should, of all people, and while he was in opposition, he saw this. You know, when you are in government, people aren't going to present to you the reality on the ground. These are the clearest words. They'll take you to, you know, smiling patients. They're not going to take you to what people are having to experience on a daily basis. The situation is very serious, and it's not going to be resolved by the patchwork that the government has attempted to put in place in order to cover for the manpower shortfall since they fired those nurses.
What were they asked to reapply? What is the state of affairs right now? Because, I mean, you know better than anyone of us, right, Mr. Chipimo. These people have got families.
They do. And I think it's definitely insensitive, because, number one, the government was claiming that, you know, with the nurses not being available while they were on strike, people were dying. But the moment that you fire them, then you are basically ensuring that those deaths will continue. Number two, you're punishing two different groups, those who depend on the services of those nurses, and then the nurses themselves who need a livelihood and need, you know, means through which they can sustain their own families. Number three, you're looking at this whole question of unemployment. Now, we have the number of those who are deeply affected by the lack of opportunity for a decent way of putting food on the table. And I think that the levels of insensitivity, the levels of intolerance, I've never known them to be this bad in any government administration before the Patriotic Front. It's as though they've shielded themselves from the reality on the ground. And you can see that for them, as long as they are able to, you know, get a ministerial car, have a maid paid for, have a house servant paid for, have a gardener paid for, when fuel is increased, they don't feel the impact of it because their conditions of service describe the condition not on the basis of money, but on the basis of the actual service. So, for example,
yes,
a minister will be entitled to something like, you know, 80 liters of petrol a week. Now, when the price of petrol goes up, he doesn't worry because he still gets his 80 liters, which means that him and everybody else who has all these entitlements, they get an increment, whereas the rest of us are having to lay off people who are running small businesses because we can't afford the new minimum wage, we can't afford the increased impact of fuel, increased impact of living your prices. All of these things are a reflection of the lack of sensitivity, the lack of care that we'd have thought would have characterized a government that had fought so hard for 10 years to get into power and rode on the back of the suffering of the people that do it, and now it is turning its back on them when they need them most. It is an unacceptable situation.
You are listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. Our featured guest today is Mr. Elias Chipimo Jr., president of the National Restoration Party, brought to you by courtesy of FreshAromaMinistries.org, which is run by Pastor Mwaka. The conference for this year is going to be held on Thursday, April 10th to Sunday, April 15th. Speakers include Bishop Eli Jacob from Dallas, Prophetess Sarah Morgan, California, Dr. Nevis Mumba, Zambia, and Pastor Angel Beverly from Zimbabwe. If you need to register, you need to go to the website fresharomaministry.org. Let me switch gears here and just finish off what I need to ask, and then I can allow my colleagues to ask their questions. A lot of people have called in, and of course, we haven't had you for a while, so you can imagine the thirst and the the desire to hear from you, Mr. Chipimo.
I look forward to hearing from them.
Yeah, we haven't had you for a while. Let's talk about NAREP. Honorable Siria made a statement a few days ago to say they are willing to give up the presidency. So for the unity of the political parties coming together, where is NAREP in line with this political party coalition coming together? I mean, what is NAREP's position on that?
Well, we are not just talking about it. We're actually actively doing something about it. And, you know, I don't mind announcing perhaps for the first time publicly that next Friday we'll actually be hosting a press conference where we will have various groups coming together under the theme of unity. These are different political parties and political players. And certainly the statements and sentiments expressed by Dorothy and others are very welcome. But I think that the proof of the pudding is always in the eating. I think it's one thing to say, you know, we're happy to give up the presidency, but then you end up fighting tooth and nail to ensure you get it. So again, you find words may not necessarily match action. I think the truest test of an expression like that would be not to say we're prepared to do it, but to say we will not pursue this. We will back somebody who, you know, can lead the nation as a unifier. I think that if we start to hear those kinds of sentiments, then I think we will really be making very good progress towards where we need to get this country, because it desperately needs a uniter and not a divider. It cannot afford to have another divisive element after the PF has been removed from power.
Is it? I'm trying to avoid the speculation and the rumor mongering. Okay, maybe this will be said at a press conference. I don't want to preempt you. Is HH going to be the candidate for the coalition?
I think that there will obviously be a lot of speculation and a lot of questions around who will eventually emerge. What I can say for now is that at the moment, the drivers on the practical level of opposition unity are really none of the big players. I think the big players will come in. But the real drivers, you know, and it's naturally, you know, that will be the case, because when you have those that believe that, you know, they have some kind of, you know, God-given right to rule, being on the scene because of the length of time that they've been there, and because of numbers in parliament and because of previous elections, it becomes very difficult to have the leadership of such an initiative be left in the hands of those big players, because the level of humility that would be required to really bring people together would be of the proportions that I think we could only witness with Nelson Mandela. And I think that really the big players hold the key to opposition unity on a national scale, because if they were to say, none of us big guys are going to take the presidency, that would instantly unite the country. But the likelihood of that happening is really not that high. And so one has to find other ways of trying to bring a coalition of the willing around a unity theme together.
Excellent. Okay, we shall wait for the press conference and we shall be following. Before I hand over to my colleagues to share, you and I communicate a lot. It's not a secret. I'm not even afraid to tell the world. We are not going to be like other people who do things behind it. And the things you send me, I read quite a lot. I would have wanted to ask a lot of questions from the materials I have. Just this one point: the strategic goal to mobilize. NAREP's strategic goal to mobilize 750,000 members. Where does that stand? What is the way forward?
Yes, and I'm glad you said what you said, Nathan, because it's the kind of politics that we feel is the future for our country.
Mm.
You know, based on transparency, not based on, you know, shadow issues and you know, hiding things and trying to prevent something that's not true. And so it is important that, you know, you are transparent, and I'm very relieved. And you will have noticed from a lot of the material that we've maintained our consistency in terms of promoting the values-based approach and issue-based politics. You will notice that we don't insult people. We always focus on issues. As I say, I don't hate Mr. Saka, but I hate what he is turning this country into. You have to hate the sin, not the sinner. And when you focus on what we are trying to do, our strategy is very much based on offering something unique, something different, something that helps the people to see that if we put these leaders into power, we can have a genuine move towards a nation that can live up to what is truly expected of it, that can make the most of its resources for the benefit of its people. And this is the message we've been sending around. And when we set that goal of 750,000 members, it was very much with the view that this membership would be generated from the community engagement that we would undertake. And we have been doing that. Our big challenge, and in our step toward the goal, we haven't hit our goal. We're still very far from it. You know, I'll be the very first to admit that. And our greatest challenge has been how we get around the country to ensure that that message is heard directly inside the people. Mm-hmm. We started various initiatives to help us to get there, because our focus is not to make people believe that somehow we will do things for them, but that we will empower them to realize that they can do things for themselves, that they are more than capable of providing the leadership at the local community level than somebody who sits out in the Lusaka thinking he knows better. For example, if you look at this issue of agriculture, and I don't know if any of the listeners will be interested in raising these issues, but we have a serious challenge over the millennium question, and we have a serious challenge over our production this year. What's the problem? The average farmer, small-scale farmer, peasant farmer, rural farmer, is growing maize and is producing roughly 2 to 2.5 tons per hectare. Now, that is one-third of what they should be doing. They should be doing minimum 6 to 8 tons per hectare. There's one farmer who is being assisted through research projects which are based here in this country, where you look at the timing of your planting, where you look at how you apply your fertilizer, and then you look at how you manage the crop generally. And this farmer has equipment which, the newest equipment is 14 years old, and that farmer is producing 11 tons per hectare. So this is not even an issue of price. It's an issue of productivity. So you can get each peasant farmer, rural farmer, to actually grow the same amount of, using the same amount of feed, but they are now able to grow 3 to 4 times the amount of grain. So therefore, they get a much bigger return. Now, there are ways in which this can be done. It's not being done correctly under the current year's administration. So our whole focus and approach is to find that way of empowering people by just working on simple community projects with them, another of which, and I would like to appeal to the listeners, is what we call our Clothes for Change program, where we are getting clothes that people are not wearing or prepared to discard, or they've just been sitting in a shelf and a cupboard for many years. And we're pulling these together, sorting them out, taking them to these rural communities, working with the women, giving them, for example, in Western Province, where they use them as seed capital. They take them into the deeper rural area, and they exchange them for village chickens, and then come and sell those village chickens in town, starting their business. This is the kind of empowerment that I think leads to, you know, the genuine change that people are looking for.
Excellent. We're talking to NARE President, Mr. Elias Chikomo Jr. Those who would like to ask questions, press 1 on your phone keypad. Let me quickly go to the questions. We have like 10, 15 minutes left here. Area code 781. 781.
Thank you very much, Pastor Nathan. My name is Reverend Masua. Mr. Chipimo, how are you today?
Reverend Masua, I'm very, very well, and I'd like to thank you for calling in.
Sure, sure. Thank you very much. I have a question, Mr. Chipimo, and my question is to do with the Kavimba Tribunal. And before I answer ask this question, I would like to really salute you for your labor of love and what you're doing for the people of Zambia. And I have a quote for Zambia, and the quote that I have for Zambia is that, and I quote, "Nothing in the world is more dangerous than a sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." End of quote. That's by Martin Luther King Jr. I am seeing in Zambia that people who have the knowledge of things have chosen to be ignorant. And Mr. Chipimo, looking at the Kavimba Tribunal, and by the way, if anybody from the Office of the President or from the Fawcett Quarters feel that is defamation, I choose not to retract my words. I'm looking at the Kavimba Tribunal, Mr. Chipimo, and I'm looking at the Justice Minister himself, who was called upon to go to the Anti-Corruption Commission and chose to go with unruly PF cadres, a total disregard of the law by Justice Minister. The tribunal has been set up, and the president has chosen not to lay him aside or to let him stop functioning as Justice Minister the judiciary is highly synced with the Ministry of Justice. And the person who is being questioned to have abused his authority is still in position as Justice Minister. Do we expect an outcome that will be genuine and justified, Mr. Chipimo?
Yes. First of all, thank you for your candid words. And I can assure you that whether anybody is listening or not, those words are not defamatory. I'm fond of quoting the kind of words that you have just expressed. And one of my favorite is from Plato, from 450 BC. And he said that the price good men pay for indifference to public affairs is to be ruled by evil men. It's a very strong statement, but it is very telling about how it is that when people who have a capability to stand up for what is right choose not to, then what happens to a nation? What happens to a people? What happens to a community? There's a similar expression, you know, evil prevails in the world because good men do nothing. And if you look around at what's happening at the moment in Zambia, there is a lot of things that can only be categorized as evil. But let's, you know, focus on your question. You're asking about the tribunal and you're raising issues around the perceptions of justice. If a minister who happens to be close to the president is accused of something fairly serious, he's alleged to have published or made available a opinion, effectively an official opinion from the Solicitor General to assist a cause of his party, and they see that as abuse. Now, the tribunal would have to make its findings, but in any situation where you have such a charge being leveled against a senior government official, the procedural thing to do, the right thing to do, would be for that minister or that public official to step down to facilitate a just process. Because while that person is holding his position, it's very difficult for those who will be giving evidence, especially if they are subordinate, to be able to do so freely without fear of any repercussion. And you remember that there was a precedent set for all the things that people may have said about Doris Ilie at the time. She was wise enough to step down until the tribunal had heard the allegations and the charge that had been leveled against her. Her name was subsequently cleared, and Lucia Banda then reappointed her as a minister, although he moved her to a different ministry. Now, that was the right thing to do for Dorothea to have stepped down pending the outcome of the investigations and or the tribunal hearing. Now, if we see what happened with the two deputy ministers who were simply accused in the Auditor General's report of having conducted themselves in an inappropriate manner, and these are allegations, and we saw the reaction of the president. He was very swift and immediate in relieving them of their duty. Now, this is a president who says that he's allergic to corruption. So you would expect that there would have been a consistency if we were not to accuse him of applying this approach to corruption in a selective manner. And it shouldn't even take the public to have to tell the Minister of Justice that the right thing to do is to step down. He himself should have come to that conclusion before, you know, being challenged to do so. It's unfortunate. This is where we are. It's not a legal requirement for him to step down, but his not doing so sends a very clear signal about the kind of leadership that we have in power today.
Okay. Thank you, Rev. Masua from the Boston area, for that question. We appreciate you joining us. Let me go. Yankee, please go ahead with your question. Tell Mr. Chipimo where you are calling from.
Mr. Machimo, I'm calling from the United States in the state of Missouri, the city of St. Louis. How are you today? I respect your time that you spent and the information you're revealing. You know, I really appreciate what you mentioned about the farmers, and that is something that, you know, I have also, you know, championed that idea. Presently, Zambia the average hospital bed, I think, is less than one per 1,000. And I think that that could be changed. And rather than people looking at changing the whole country at one time, which would be ideal, but it's not feasible, groups could take on just a mere providence and provide the facilities in order to get the bed count up to six per 1,000, similar to what it is in France. And I wonder, what do you think about those ideas? You know, the statement you made about the change, but change doesn't have to be a broad change. It can be a little change, and sooner or later it would grow into a much greater change. So what is your opinion on that?
I really like your approach. It's funny, but it is little things that makes a big difference. And you touch upon an area that was central to my decision to go into politics. I was a lawyer running the largest legal practice in the country. I didn't have need for almost anything. If I needed to travel, I could travel. If I needed to get treated abroad, I could do that. I never did, but, you know, should that have arisen, it was well within my capability to attend to. And when I lost my mother in a terrible road traffic accident, you know, 600 kilometers outside Lusaka, and we had to airlift my father to Lusaka, and the CAT scan wasn't working, and the radiographer wasn't available, so we weren't sure as to just what the extent of his injuries was. And the fact that he lived was only because we were able to get him to a center that, while not perfect, was still able to do more than where the accident had occurred. And yet that's the reality for so many people. And it was that realization that made me stop and realize that maybe it wasn't good enough for me to be all right and ignore everybody else when I believe a capability of coming up with ideas and a vision that can take our nation forward. So the health sector for me is a critical reminder of why I am in politics. And what you say is so amazingly true. I go to places where the distance between where people live and where medical attention that can save their lives is located is sometimes over 20 kilometers. And I asked the people, what do you do? What happened? They said, well, when somebody is very sick, they just start walking. They carry them on the back. They carry them in a wheelbarrow. And where they stop, they spend the night. And then they just keep going until they get to the hospital. Now, during the rainy season, you have a lot of these little bridges that are just washed away. You cannot cross the stream. And so there's always a way around, though. But it's just that it takes so much more. It could add another 5 kilometers to the journey, just because they've got to do the detour, because the bridge has been washed away. That's how bad things get. And when you go into these places, you'll find one clinic that has one blanket with one room that serves as a maternity ward, but is also an inpatient room as well. And so when somebody's delivering, they have to move that patient out. You take just one blanket to that place, that increases the number of blankets in that clinic by 100%. It is really little things like that that make a big difference. But we're trying so hard to do this huge, massive change, which is not going to impact those people. I mean, you can, you know, make the central district hospital the fanciest thing in the world, but it will not impact the woman who still has to walk 10 kilometers for her maternal needs to be addressed. And so this whole idea of just getting people, especially working with groups like the Mission Hospital, like the Mission the missionaries that are already there in here, they usually run some of the best institutions in the rural community. It's these simple things that will make a difference. And to give the government some credit with regard to this particular sector, because it is a sector that is also close to Mr. Thacker's heart, they have commissioned the construction of something like 650 maternal health shelters in rural communities. But even that, if you think about it, is a drop in the ocean. What it may do in some cases is bring a shelter perhaps 10 kilometers closer rather than 20. We still have a deep problem. And I like the approach that you're suggesting, that let's just try and make, you know, more hospital beds available for the per capita that's there. And I think that we need to completely redesign the way in which people live in communities. We need to get them to a more centralized location that can take care of the educational, health, and recreational and community services. It's easier to distribute goods and services with regards to health, agriculture, and other things. And believe it or not, the money is there to be able to do some of these things. We need to get into remote diagnosis. There are systems available now that I was discussing with professors at the University of California, Berkeley, four and a half years ago, where you use a cell phone to take a picture of any kind of sample. It can be urine, it can be saliva, it can be blood, because you've designed a simple microscope that you attach to the end of any camera, and that is sent by text message to a remote center, which then sends back the diagnosis immediately. You know, the solutions are there. What we lack is just one thing. You see, Africa's greatest crisis is not poverty, it's not malaria, it's not HIV, it's not lack of infrastructure. Our greatest crisis is lack of quality, caring leadership at all levels of society.
Excellent. Thank you. If you would like, those would like to follow more information about the National Restoration Party and what they are doing, their values, their motto, their manifesto, you can go to newzambia.org, newzambia.org. I'll take one more question and we'll conclude. I'll go to Canada so that I don't get fired. Roger, please go ahead.
Thank you, Nathan, and thank you, Mr. Chimomo, for joining us. I just want to make a follow-up to Nathan's question about Chimomo. 1991, we all resolved as a nation, UNIPA had to go, and we made it happen. What is the resolve of the Zambian people? That includes all the political parties. What is happening in our country as a recipe to put our nation in uncharted territories of all other areas we've seen, South Sudan now, Central Republic. We don't want to go there. So what is the resolve of your NAREP and everyone else? And if you have resolved that PF is not the right party, Mr. Sata is not the right man for our country, could we see you more determined than before, put away everyone's selfish interest and just focus on one thing that is driving out a PF in 2016?
Yes. This is, we started the interview, and it's interesting you asked this question because we are ending with pretty much what we started with. When Nathan had asked, about the cathedral hearing, and I said, well, really, there are two issues that are dominating the political environment in Zambia right now. One is the question of the constitution, and the other is unity around the way forward, given that the levels of frustration are now universal in the country with regard to how we are being governed. And I think this is really the point that it is central to the question you're raising. You know, what is the way forward? You constantly hear it. Nobody knows. They know that, you know, you have many different parties. They know that politics is a very cynical business where people make promises and they don't live up to them once they have acquired the power. It's the standard thing that you hear. They will tell you, what you say sounds so good, but we've heard good things before. And we've been let down. Promises are made, we are lied to. So just give us something now, we know that, you know, nothing is really going to change. And the way forward has to be a unity around a vision and a values-based approach, an issues-based approach. That's my personal view. Because if we simply unite together in order to get rid of Michael Sata, we may end up putting something even worse. And it's this issue which really calls upon us all to be fully sacrificial and to really judge ourselves with sober judgment and ask ourselves, because if you power doesn't make you a better person. Power just concentrates the qualities you already have. You know, many people may complain, for example, about Michael Sata. Some people say he's changed. Actually, he hasn't changed. All that's happened is that the character that was there has simply been given an immense amount of power. and you're seeing that character coming out in full display. And this is what we need to look at now with anybody who is aspiring to lead this nation. I've constantly said that Zambia now needs a leader, not a politician. We need somebody who will not focus on partisan issues per se, but will focus more on what the country needs and will be ready when you identify somebody who is more capable in terms of uniting the country and not bringing about division. Identifying and saying, I will back that, even if I myself would have wanted to stand. We have to find a way of removing the ego that tends to be associated with our politics and bringing character politics. Assess, if this person wants to be given power, first of all, how do they behave now? How do their cadres behave now? How do they react when they are challenged? Do they absorb things? Do they reflect on them? Are they focusing on issues? This is the kind of leadership that I think Zambia desperately needs. So there can be no doubt that we need to unite, but I think we've got to unite around a vision and a values-based, issue-based approach.
Thank you, Roger. Mr. Chipimo, here's a question from Malamakatuwende from Lusaka. They are listening online. They say, on the Constitution, what would you do if you discover that gay rights are a part of the clause in the body of the text? Do you support gay rights?
We have constantly said that we take a biblical stand on the whole question of homosexuality. This is a debate that, you know, will go on and on for some time. It's not a debate that will end, especially given what's been going on in Uganda and in Nigeria, where they recently signed into law quite a heavy set of penalties against those that are associated with any act of homosexuality. My personal stance is what is contained in the Bible. And so I would respond the way any Christian would respond to this issue.
Hello, Nathan, have you dropped or something has happened?
I don't know. I think he's not there. Let me just check on him.
I'm here. I can hear you.
Yeah, no, Nathan.
But the line went dead briefly.
Yes. Alexa, Steve, Nathan. Before he comes, Dr. Patrick, any word to President Chipimo here?
Yes, there are two profound statements that he made, which I'm going to carry with me, and I'm going to re-quote and give him tribute to those quotes. The first one that has a great impact on me is his statement when he said, "Our greatest obstacle is quality, caring leadership." Said it is not corruption, it's not AIDS, it's not poverty. It's quality, the lack of quality, caring leadership. And then to dovetail with that, he also said, power concentrates the characteristics you already have. Two profound statements in which, from this point on, I'm going to look at those qualities and discern the characteristics as to whether or not they will become good leaders. I found both of those qualities in President Barack Obama, and I'm hearing a lot of those qualities in Brother Chipimo, which when he shared with us his experience with the passing of his mother and the conditions of his father, those characteristics are very important, and I'm going to bring that to the forefront of my thinking with regards to leaders at present and in the future.
Okay. Before Nathan comes in, Nathan, are you there?
Yes, my line just dropped. I'm really sorry about that. Thank you, Roger. Go ahead with the thought that Dr. Patrick was putting across, Roger. You wanted to take it somewhere?
No, not really. It is just to reinforce it, actually. I just want to say I really like the answer that Pimo gave. We are now not going to unite towards anybody. I think we are looking for a uniter. And the way they behave today, I think we will tell us. We've been cheated before by the president. We can't be cheated again.
I know. It's very true. And Mr. Chipimo has dropped, eh? Okay.
Ah, he should still be there.
Oh, Mr. Chipimo, I thought you were dropped.
Maybe he did. Okay, that's okay then.
Okay. Yes, interesting discussion there. A few technicalities here. At times, those things happen. Pastor Masua, Priscilla, you are quiet for some reason. I don't know. You want to be humble this morning. Before I go to Pastor Masua, Priscilla, your thoughts. What has stood out to you? What jumps out of some of the things Mr. Chipimo said? Priscilla? Okay. Let's go to... Pastor, you made a statement which was... I like what you said. I know we are all just tired of, you know, whether somebody's listening and they're going to report, just speak your heart about these issues.
Yes, Vanessa, thank you very much for according me another chance to express myself on this program. It is a fact that Zambians have come to realize that they've been duped. The Patriotic Front has lamentably failed to fulfill their electoral promises. And it is sad to note that we have a president who I have so much respect for, and he performed very well as an opposition president. And had he continued the way he was, when he was in the opposition, Zambia could have been a better country today.
Yes.
Sad to say, Vanessa, we have a president who, after being elected, has chosen to go to sleep. Mr. Sata is not the person I knew when he was in the opposition. He's not the person I knew when he was health minister. And he knows very well that for sure the University Teaching Hospital is a death trap today. The firing of the nurses, to me, is not justified. We could have addressed that issue differently. And a leader like Mr. Chipimo has brought up issues that are standing out, that the character of somebody, when they become a president, you really see it stand out. And what the Zambians need to do, Vanessa, is that they should have a united front. They should have a united front. We have a precedence when UDA was formed, when the opposition parties came together, and we said, hey, we'll have the late Anderson Mazoka be president, or we'll have Tilienji Kaunda be president, or president of the other opposition party, which did not go anywhere. Having a united front now might give room for the Patriotic Front to puncture the ideas or what they'll be trying to foster. They should play their cards very well. Otherwise, having a united front today and elections are in 2016 might be a little shaky. And if, like Doris Leah said, that they are putting aside the presidency just to unite, if all the political parties can say so, I will salute that idea. But it may be a little shaky, Vanessa, to say
yes,
now is the time to do ABC.
Excellent. Let's hear from somebody else. Area code 613.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning. I think it's Seneca Nkanza Warner.
Oh, welcome.
Welcome. Your thoughts, I know you want to ask a question to Mr. Chitimo. We're trying to see if we can bring him back. I think the line dropped like mine did. Your thoughts on what you have heard him say, what has stood out to you? What did you say your name was?
Seneca Nkanza Wana. I'm calling from Canada, Ottawa.
She's a clever Kaonde lady from Ontario.
I know Kaondes are very clever. Go ahead, Nkanza.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this opportunity. I wanted to ask him a question. Now I think, I don't know whether it's still appropriate or not.
No, we're trying to see if we can get him. You know, at times these lines in Zambia, we don't know what's happening. Let me see. Just give me a moment here. Romatilda, do we have him back?
No, we don't, but I can try one more time. Just give me 30 seconds.
Okay, yeah. So did you want to keep your question, Nkanza, or you wanted to make a comment?
I would have loved to ask a question, but I think maybe I can ask a question. Maybe it can be held for him. I don't know. I wanted him to answer it.
Yeah, let him come back. We'll try to bring him back for him to answer your question. Dr. Monsanje, you may have to go back to Zambia and teach mathematics in Tonga. You've heard what has happened.
I've heard about that. Mathematics is
like
easy. But talk about chemistry.
Okay.
I had a comment which I wanted
Dr.
to ask
Musanje,
you to...
Hold on, Dr. Musanje. Matilda, yes?
I have Bachipimo back on the line.
Okay, Bachipimo. Okay, let's go to Ms. Nkanza to ask a question. Mr. Chipimo, we have a question for you from Canada as well. Go ahead, Ms. Nkanza.
Yes. Thank you very much for this opportunity, being on the phone with executive people. I have about two questions for the candidate. One question is that if he really is a team player and he would like to see poverty at the local level in Zambia, how is he gonna work to bring poverty levels down in rural Zambia how is he gonna reduce poverty levels in Zambia if he cannot work with the current government or the other opposition, or if he's able to, is it possible that he can elaborate more on how you can alleviate poverty in rural Zambia with farmers? I'm very touched with Zambians who are in rural areas who cannot read and write, and how is his policies going to help somebody who can't read and write, and how are they going to get out of poverty? Even if there's good readership, how is he going to show that? Can he bring out the policies that is going to bring economically, socially, politically, and spiritual to enable a person who's in rural Zambia to have an affordable living standard to meet with other Zambians who are educated?
Mr. Chipimo, before you answer that question, I want us to do this. Let's take another question from the UK. You can answer Ms. Nkanza's question and the question from the UK, and then we'll conclude our discussion for today. UK, please go ahead. Your name, please.
Hi, it's Tandi Chihana.
Mwanangu, awuli.
Makola, muliole.
Go ahead.
I'm really enjoying this today. I just had a question for President Elias Chipimo. For someone like me who's openly leaving NAREP, I think I leave that as openly as possible. And I know that there are so many people who are living in the shadows that are sympathetic or supporters of NAREP. But then I'm wondering how people can rise above the politics of intimidation. Take, for instance, 2 days ago, I made a remark online to say I was happy to see that the clause on dual citizenship was included in the leaked draft constitution, and I was saying if it indeed it is the actual draft constitution, I'll be so pleased. I got a text message from Zambia literally telling me I should keep away from making remarks about this, about the draft constitution, because it's a very sensitive issue at home at the moment, and my talking about it could have implications on my family. And I think a lot of that is happening to a lot of people. That's why people choose to be underground. But I'm wondering what President Chipimo would recommend would be the best way forward for those who would love to openly support, and how can they best deal with these politics of intimidation from home.
Excellent. Thank you, ladies. Mr. Chipimo, please go ahead.
Okay, these are really critical questions. And Ms. Ntanga, I feel your pain in your question. And
yes.
Believe me, it's a pain that I constantly experience as I go around all the rural communities, because you see poverty that shouldn't be there. I started to give an example. If you look at the agricultural sector, because this is the mainstay of the rural communities. When you go into the rural communities, typically this is their life. They get up in the morning, they don't have very much to eat, but you know, they may pound, whether it's rice or they may have some, and that's what their breakfast is. Or they do just tea, but they go out into the field. And they're in the field, and around 1 or 2 o'clock they get home, and then they have their meal for the day. And that's it. They sleep early, then they're up again at the crack of dawn, have their tea, maybe have some porridge, out in the field, work very hard, and then they're back again. They have children. When it's the rainy season, they are not able to send their children to school on certain days because the distance that those children, and this is the average situation with a lot of people in these rural communities, the schools are quite, are located quite far from where the main settlements are located. Some may be close to the school, but most are not. And so, in a typical situation, they may be walking 2 to 7 kilometers. Now, you can imagine a child is going hungry. By the time they actually get to school, what can they actually learn? The teacher probably is working on his field, and so school tends to start late. You know, all this compounded effect is producing children that are malnourished, stunted in their growth, because if they don't get a certain type of nutrition at a certain age, the neural connections that should form to enable you to conduct, you know, normal mental activity never happens. And once that's lost, it can never be recovered. So you can't say, let's now feed that child properly when they're 12 years old. It's too late, we've window. So the problem is very deep. So I just want to give some perspective to what this poverty means, because, you know, we can use the word but not really understand that actually it's a very deep, deep problem. So that even when that child gets into grade 12, we shouldn't be surprised that they're not able to pass, because their mental capacity was retarded too when they didn't get the right nutritional input that they needed. And these are things that I focus on a lot. Now, I was giving an example about the agricultural sector, because that is the mainstay. That's what drives the economies in these rural areas. So what should we do? We have to move to what we call knowledge-based agriculture. And these are not things that I'm inventing. These are things that the experts tell me. I sat down, I speak to people who are knowledgeable in these areas, because I need to think through carefully what policy framework can we put in place that will actually make sense rather than just be a bunch of words. And they say our country is divided into maybe 3 regions. You have the north where you can grow 2 to 3 crops of beans in one season. Beans takes 3 months to plant and harvest. So when the early rains come in places like Kasama and in Porokoso, the rain comes as early as September, fully fledged, when Lusaka is still dry. October, November, December, they are harvesting their first crop in December. They plant again. By March, they're harvesting their second crop. April, May, the late rains come, and they're very heavy in April and May in northern provinces. And so they can even do a third crop. We have the DRC as the border. That should be able to accommodate the production that is that province. You have the central province, and this is what I can call the central region. So we deal with the north, we deal with the central. These are fertile areas. They never have a problem with rain. Fertile soils, lots and lots of water. But people are starving. People are getting into early pregnancy. People are not going to school. back to the knowledge-based agriculture that we need to develop. You have institutions like the Golden Valley Agricultural Research Trust, which is advising governments within the region. Namibia is moving far ahead of Zambia in terms of sorting out its agricultural policy and making sure that you don't have rural poverty. We can borrow the ideas that our own institutions are lending to other governments who are implementing these things. As I say, the solutions are there. The problem is leadership. If I keep coming back to that issue, it is just leadership, and it's caring, quality leadership that we must put in place. And for me, that's what I'm battling to make the agenda for how we debate the kind of leadership that this country needs. We could go on, I could give you many examples, because livestock can grow in any part of the country. What you need are good veterinarian services. That's the key. It's the research, it's the extension services that helps with the backward linkages as well as the forward linkages. Soybeans can be grown in many parts of the country. Sorghum can grow even in dry places. We need to find a leader that can help to shape the changing of our mindset so that we are not dependent on a crop which is so problematic and politically difficult to handle. So these are just small things that can be done that can have a major impact before you even get to talking about roads and all the other, you know, heavy investment, capital investment options for development, although those are also important. Let's come to the question that Tandiwa raised. Tandi, one thing that I think we're going to have to accept is that this battle will require bravery because we will face intimidation. I myself, as somebody who is leading a political party, have to play a role to help to support the kind of things that you are doing. So if we take the example that you have given us, where you comment on the citizenship clause and the question of dual citizenship, and you're trying to uphold that because it's actually something that benefits Zambians, and it's been misunderstood by the PF. You can have that debate, whether in the context of the what's contained in the draft new constitution or what's contained in the previous constitution. But in order for you to feel less intimidated by this whole thing, the responsibility really lies on the rest of us standing up and speaking about that very issue as well. So the moment that somebody decides that they're going to try and silence you, I want to be able to pick up that issue and talk about it and say, yes, in this leaked draft constitution, the question of dual citizenship has been raised, and we support the idea of dual citizenship. How many people are they going to attempt to intimidate? You see, the whole idea behind intimidation, especially by bullies, is that they want to keep it just between the two of you. Bullies don't work very well in public because they'll be exposed for being bullies. And so what we need to do is to stand united. So I am prepared to, you know, make my comment online as well about this so-called draft constitution that's been leaked. It's not an offense to talk about it. And it's a way that we can continue to apply the kinds of pressure that must be applied in order to ensure that we get the documents that every Zambian is waiting to see.
Thank you. Thank you. Excellent. Everybody, we have run out of time, and Mr. Chipimo has been gracious to stay with us and to discuss whatever we have raised today. If you wish to follow and to really understand the NAREP's vision, core values, and motto, you can go to www.newzambia.org, I believe so, and you are going to get the information there. Zambia Block Talk Radio is community-supported, we just have people who support what we do. If you choose to contribute to our running everyday expenses, you can do so by making a contribution on our PayPal link on our website, zambiablocktalkradio.com. We thank you, Vach Pimo. It's always a joy and great to listen to you and the way forward of how we need to do things. Your final words, sir, what should we expect in the year 2014? And once again, give us the information and the time of that press conference.
Yes, the press conference will be at 9 o'clock on Friday, 9 o'clock Zambian time on Friday. And I think it will set the tone for how the rest of the year will unfold. The theme is very much a theme of unity, working together, and providing genuine, humble leadership for our nation. I think there's just not enough humility in our politics. We need to be aggressive about the things that are wrong, but I think we need to be humble towards one another as individuals and recognize that, you know, we are all sinners. We will all make mistakes. And it's only through sober reflection on our own character and nature that we will make strides to improve not only our lives, but the lives of the people that are depending on that kind of leadership. So I'm very, very hopeful that in spite of everything that's going wrong, Zambia will see a brighter day. And I think it will become very clear as we move towards a more unified approach during the later part of this year.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir. And we shall be in touch and keep up with things that are happening. That was our featured show today, Mr. Elias Chikwimo, President of NAREP. And we thank everybody for calling
yes.
in. Don't go away. Please call back in. Our next discussion, we'll be talking to the Director of Curriculum from the Ministry of Education. They'll be discussing this new change that has
mm-hmm.
come up with the curriculum change from grade 1 to 4. They'll be learning in the local languages. Mr. Chikwimo, thank you very much once again, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you very much indeed.
All right. Everybody, please, when we drop, we can call back in. We'll be discussing the new curriculum that has been introduced by the Ministry of Education. This has been your host, Nathan Nkrumah from Dallas, Texas.
Thank you. Wanga ineo, moyo wachinja mama neo Ntawi zonte alikumowa, kuzipe ntawi yona kopanja Kumwana hako kuipirenji, kuchitoko na mumu follow Ama ama inei, njiwanda zota nisi Taeza talema, nayo mapempelo Atika pena siku lina, azati kumbukila oh yeah. Chifu kwa lelo, bantu bonse basowe saulemu Atate imwe, atate imwe.